Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes a Spider-Man.
Welcome to the panel. Thanks for turning up. I love when people come to the comic book panels at the Comic Expo. I'm the moderator today. My name is Keith. I'm the co-host of a podcast called We Talk Comics, which you can find on iTunes, WeTalkPodcast.com, and Comicosity.com. And I'm going to let the guys introduce themselves so they can give a little bit of a background if you're not familiar with them to start. Ryan.
I'm Ryan Ferrier. I'm a writer. I write comic books. I'm local, Calgary. Other than Terminals, which is myself and Trevor's baby that we birthed many years ago, I do books for Boom, IDW, did some Marvel work last summer, and some self-publishing stuff, and I letter a whole bunch of books too, so that's kind of me in a nutshell.
I'm Trevor Rove James. Rove is not my middle name, it's a nickname. I draw Terminals with Ryan. I worked for the last 15 years off and on in comic books, doing pencils and inks, and I currently am a full-time tattoo artist in Calgary at Ascending Koi, and that's basically me in a nutshell as well, too.
Yeah. We're just a couple of nutshell girls.
We're a couple of nuts.
Two nuts in a pod.
Well, I want to start with, now, Rove, you've got comic art and tattooing. Which led you to the other?
I always wanted to draw comics ever since I was a little kid, and tattooing kind of happened. Comic books is a really tough industry to work in full time, and you're kind of always chasing your next paycheck and your next job. So,
wait, you can get paid.
I know, right? The artists get paid typically.
Great.
Not at first.
The writers do it for exposure.
Yeah,
that's right. That's how I pay my rent.
Yeah. So I had to supplement with something, fell into tattooing, and ended up loving it. So that is my future and my main career, and then I'll do comic books on the side here and there.
Now, this was the first printed thing you had, Ryan. Now, this is actually going to have both of you answer this question. So, you both read tons of comics as kids. Mm-hmm. Love comics. And then it comes time to actually make them.
Yeah.
Where did you start learning the storytelling part of that?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I owe a lot of credit to Trevor. Because I don't think I would even have a career if it wasn't for you being like, no, we should actually do this. Because, I mean, we were talking for a long time about actually doing comics together, and I never, he's an artist, I've seen him do his work, you know, you had books, so that was easy for you to be like, no, it's a big comic, but that never really processed me, and I think a lot of creative types don't want to take that leap of faith in actually doing something, but it's actually as simple as that, and that's, anytime anyone tells me how you make comics, you just make comics, so I owe a lot to you for that, but we, sorry, what was the question?
How did you start page one, panel one? Like what?
I had no idea how to write comic books. It was such a weird, experience. I mean, I had written a lot for like movies and film and stuff like that. In my own projects, I've always been writing, but I kind of approached it at first kind of like a screenplay, but just broken down like shots. So I knew like the more or less the mechanics and the physics of a comic script just from reading comics myself. But I just dove in, at least for me, blind and just kind of figured it out. Very few people go to school to learn how to make comics. You just kind of figure it out as you go, right? It's the same with lettering too. You hope that the curve is relatively short, if not endless.
Now, Rove, there are tons of artists who can do 20 pinups that look amazing. But telling a story with images is a whole other skill set.
Yeah.
So how did you go from making a static tattoo, making a single image, to learning that that's the pacing, the storytelling craft part?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of film and TV, and I like to... I love to tell a story with pictures, and I read a million and one comic books my whole life, spent hours studying them, and got books on how to draw comics the Marvel way and the DC Comics way.
You know what's
way.
Crazy about that one? Is that Stan Lee is like the driving force of that.
I know.
Was it Steve Ditko?
Yeah, I think it was Steve Ditko.
Yeah. Sorry.
I wouldn't recommend it. The DC one was amazing. It was
Joe Rubenstein did that one? Or?
Yeah,
I'll never remember. But yeah, that one was.
Audience, great. Anyone know the?
the
writer of how to write comics the DC way, yeah, whatever it's called. It's okay.
Is there a Family Feud back then? Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lot to think about. You have to create a mood. You have to draw the eye from panel to panel. You are a costume designer, the actor, the director.
Denny O'Neill.
Thank you.
Wasn't Denny O'Neill? It started with S.
Okay, one version was done by Denny O'Neill.
Yeah.
He's Googling it, you're trying to remember. Oh, you're going to Google it. That's excellent panel.
I know, right? I love you. I don't need to be on your cell phone. It's a TikTok podcast.
Dude, we all not watch that video.
Yeah. It would be like every family dinner ever nowadays.
As long as everyone's got the typing sound shut off on their phone, we're fine.
Yeah, my parents don't have the typing
sound. Everyone's mom has that tick, 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 tick sound.
Oh, yeah.
I like it. It's like feeling I'm pushing buttons on
it. Like a typewriter.
Yeah. I like to know, like, I hit that one.
I'm going to backtrack to Terminals itself.
Yeah.
So you did 6 issues several years ago.
Yeah.
Which is now collected in trade.
Yep.
And you're back to do another... How many is the new run?
Bloodlines is 4 issues, and it's kind of different. And I mean, I think because the first book, which became a webcomic, and it kind of took on different life forms. So when they approached us some 6 years later, and they were like, "Hey, let's do some more," and we were like, "All right, well, how can we make this work?" You know, I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if another like ongoing story set immediately after we worked.
I don't think so. Yeah.
So we did, it's 4 self-contained stories and they're all kind of, they use the first book as a touchstone. So you can go into them without having read the first book at all and you can still get the story, but you'll get these little nuances and these little nods to the series. It kind of enriches the mythology that, you know, that pretentious people say about their own books.
Yeah. We've truly created our own world. And Ryan explores a lot of it, actually, in the subsequent series. Sorry. I don't know what panel etiquette is.
This is our panel, dude.
Yeah,
rules
we
made
them,
bro. Yeah. I'll bend them until they snap.
We just sit here and watch Ryan tweet for another half hour.
Yeah, but that was kind of the fun of it. Is when you create a story, there's always questions that appear, and you want to know a little bit more about a certain character, or a little bit more about the world or the timeline. And so Ryan got to play a lot with that, and we got to bring back some of the characters from the original series in really weird ways.
Yeah. Hey, where's that guy going? Why didn't you guys stop that guy?
Can you change the door?
Security on doors, relax. You let this guy in. So you're coming back to this book 6 years after having done the first run. How do you get back into that headspace?
Did you have difficulties?
Yeah, it had been 6 years, so I didn't even really draw the same. I kind of had to unlearn all the things that I've learned and go back to a little bit more basic style, I guess. And but I had all these characters in my art for so long that it was easy to want to make them come to life again, I guess.
I think in terms of writing, it was, I think that having that much of a time difference in between the work was actually really good. It would have been a far different thing if once the original book had wrapped, if they're like, no, let's keep going. Like, I think that kind of distance actually makes it a lot better, because we weren't super beholden to the narrative that existed before. Like, we wanted to do really crazy things, and I think we you know, have succeeded in that. Like, the first issue's this crazy, like, Cold War sleeper cell book, and the second one's this weird, like, Bigfoot book, you know? And so, like that distance kind of made that kind of, those kind of concepts achievable, I think, you know?
And these are self-contained stories, right?
They're all self-contained, yeah.
So you've hit two different time points in the first two issues.
Yeah.
Where are we going in 3 and 4?
Three is the one that ties closest to the original, but it's still self-contained. And that takes place in modern time, and it kind of explores, like, how we perceive deities and how that relates to superheroes, you know? And then the fourth one is straight up Salem Witch Trial.
Now, for those who haven't read Terminals, what is the give the elevator pitch, because we kind of skipped that step. What's the one paragraph what this book is about?
Okay, so it's basically since World War II, the government has been trying to make superheroes in order to keep up with the war, because, you know, the Germans were making all sorts of, they got a big winner back there. Awesome. And is that like what's his name? Joey Fatone?
It must be. Yeah.
Is it Joey Fatone over there? Or Hercules? Anyways. So they're trying to make superheroes, you know, to win wars. So, but it never works. So they go from decades of having these failed superhero experiments. And finally, in the modern time, they do. They get it. They make the first superhero team, and they turn out to be villains because everything's awful ever. And so they make one last team to fight that team, but they're like, oh, man, the last one went all villains. So they made them all terminally ill, and they don't tell them that. So it kind of, that's the five-paragraph synopsis. And there's a bear. Yeah, I should have just said there's a bear, a zombie, a werewolf, a girl that excretes bees from her pores. And, there's a 16th century ghost in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Fabio-like blonde.
There's a
man.
Lot of hot shirtless
men.
In it.
Lots of shirtless men.
Yeah.
So, really, a talking bear book.
A talking bear book.
Yeah. That's now for kids.
Like, whose parents swear? Watch a lot of violent TV.
The Walking Dead generation.
Yeah, TVMA.
TVMA.
Yeah. Maybe HBO.
Now, Ryan, did you letter the original Terminals as well?
I did, and that was my first lettering work as well. Yeah.
Now, lettering is one of the parts of the artistic process that is missed a lot in reviews, but from a reader's point of view as well. So, when you were learning how to letter and now going further, what is the biggest contribution of the letter after everyone can read the words on the page?
I think the book, the number one thing is the book will not go to print unless the letterer does his job. you know, like the book just, it won't be made. No one's going to put out a book that's not a letter. So it sucks because I love lettering and it pays the bills, but like you got to think of the spectrum of deadlines. And so this is the letter, we're the last person to get the pages to do it. We're the last person in the chain of making the book. And you get, this is the start. And so the writer will be a little late, and then the artist will be
a lot late.
This deadline never shifts. You know, so it's always a rush, and it's always kind of stressful.
You never hear anyone announce that we're holding the book for another couple of weeks to give the letterer time to polish?
Oh, yeah, never. And I think that, you know, that it's funny because of in the industry, a lot of people talk about how lettering is kind of like, now I'm a hero, but they say unsung heroes, right? But like, it's true. But I also think that I don't. It doesn't bother me because part of lettering, the whole point is to make it so you don't notice lettering, you know, unless it's really like a stylistic choice. Like for example, Deadly Class lettering looks amazing, and it's stylistically very different. But for the most part, when you're reading a comic, you don't want to be like reading the book and then, oh, look at this lettering. Unless you know lettering, but oh, look at this lettering, because it takes you out of the story. So we're kind of like ghosts that haunt your book.
You're like the focus operator on a camera.
But I actually went back and re-lettered terminals because my old day job was a graphic designer. I did that for like 12 years, and our editor at the time, Courtney, was like, "Hey, you know graphic design, you know the software, so you can letter the book." And I was like, okay, sure. But I never lettered a book before. And when it first came out, it was terrible. It was horrible. So I actually went back and re-lettered it. Yeah.
What kind of lettering style do you actually use that's the winner?
I'm not sure I understand.
No, like what type of lettering? Or even how did you learn? Like, do you hand do it, or do you...
Oh, it's all digital, yeah. Most comics is digital now. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because, like, I'd used the software and I was a graphic designer for so long that the actual mechanics of doing it, I can do it seamlessly. But you learn that there's such a specific skill set and art to it that, you know, it's a learning curve. It's a relatively short learning curve compared to any other artistic role, but it's also, it hits you like a brick when you look at the lettering. I look at the lettering now on some of my first stuff, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know.
It has the same challenge that the art does of, you have to keep the reader's eye moving the right directions and not backtracking, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you've got to fit in every word that the writer has jammed in there.
Yeah, and we're kind of the worst. we write a lot, too much, all the time.
We don't make it easy either. We put all the awesome looking important stuff everywhere, and you have to find a place to put bubble that doesn't get in the way of things. And I try to leave a little bit of space for the letters thinking ahead, but I think my ego doesn't allow me to leave a lot of empty space, so.
Yeah. Did you, I'm sorry, keep
no, go
interrupt.
Ahead.
Did you find, like, because you've done script, you've done comics before with other writers.
Mm-hmm.
How awesome was my, not, how,
right, did you, little jokes in the script that I know I'm the only one who's going to read?
Did you notice, though, that, like, could you see any sort of change in the scripts as the things went on? Like, did it become easier for you at the longer, because we did that for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just, like, a one and done book. That was, like, 2 years of our, you know, of working.
Yeah.
So, did your kind of workflow and that change with just like mine did, or was it kind of, was I always that good? I'm sorry.
like did I get in your head a little bit better and understand what...
Was the first issue, was it horrible? Because I had never written it. Be honest.
Oh,
no. Be honest, we're public.
like...
that That pitch of voice definitely sounds awesome.
It's like, no. I thought it was great. Yeah, I'm trying to remember back to like actually reading the scripts and but I don't. I think you're naturally super funny and enjoyable to read, and I'm not a stickler for formatting and and grammar and such.
Have you ever done Marvel style where it's like not like the panel?
Yeah, when I was working at Legend of Isis, they'd send me a paragraph of what is going to happen, and the whole entire script was maybe 3 pages.
Oh, wow.
And I just had to basically write every frame to frame.
Try to modern Jack Kirby.
Basically, and that's like a superhero of artists. Not really at all.
Sorry, Keith, I derailed you.
That's all right. It's fascinating stuff. You guys need to hug it out. You good?
Oh, we will.
Rolf, what else did you work on in the meantime? What other comics did you do between these two?
In the meantime, nothing. I retired. I started tattooing full time, and I didn't think I would be going back into comic books. But then, when Penny Farthing asked for more, and I knew I'd work with Ryan again, and we had a chance to just go back to that place. I did it for nostalgic reasons mostly, and romantical reasons.
What time are we at? We're probably good to take questions now, if anyone's got any. Otherwise, we'll go in a different direction. Do we have any questions? Guy up here in the front.
You write a lot of books with a variety of different artists. Do you cater your scripts to the artists that you're working with? For example, if Rogue doesn't like to draw hands, do you avoid creating a character with 1,000 hands? Or is that motivation to create the character with 1,000 hands?
How did you read my pitch about the 1,000 hand?
And who told you about my fear of drawing hands?
I think it's whenever I come... Whenever I'm working on a book with an artist, I think it comes a bit more organically. You know, once me and the team, or the team 9, you know, are like, yeah, we're going to keep doing this. And then there's always kind of this ongoing discussion about, well, how do we work together? Because for the most part, I don't want to be here's a script, do it. You know, here's a script, do it. That gets kind of, I don't know, some artists like that, some artists don't. So I think every collaboration is really different, and you have to kind of explore that. It's like a dance, you know. It's a ritual of sorts. Every book's different. I've had books where like Dave, for example, I've worked on Dave for years with Valentin Ramon. I've never heard his voice. I don't know what he looks like. So we just, you know, it different things work. And then I have other collaborators where we talk on the phone every day, every week. So it's never a dull moment.
How far down the road on a script for your creator-owned stuff are you before there's an artist attached? Are you at the pitch and kind of outline stage, or are you actually like scripting before you have an artist?
I rarely will do like a full script before I have an artist. Usually, like, I won't even dive into a pitch script. Because a pitch script, you know, 5 to 8 to 11 pages, usually, if not the first issue. But I would, very rarely, I can think maybe twice where I've actually written a script without an artist attached, because it was just one of those things where, like, you took too much NyQuil and you had to get it out, kind of thing. So, but normally, yeah, I like to have that discussion with an artist about, you know, how to go and how to do things. So that informs the script more than or the story rather, more than I could just by typing a script, I think.
Another question in the back here.
So I'm sure everyone at some point has read a book before the letter, and you got to read the whole panel before you figure out who's talking and when. Mm-hmm. So do you actually find it difficult to keep the eye moving the right way, or because the punch parts, so you're following the story, do you ever find that difficult with certain art styles to keep it performing that way, or is there always enough room?
I think, and Trevor, you touched on it. That's something that all artists think about.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Most of the time it's kind of like everyone knows what they're doing. When you do like thumbs and stuff, you look at the bubbles and balloons.
I'll look at the amount of script that's going to be in each panel. Realizing I need to leave a little bit of dead space, and I try to leave the dead space in a somewhat orderly fashion. But I actually don't understand lettering in any way. I just kind of randomly leave nice spaces for stuff.
Yeah, I've never had a problem with lettering with stuff, so
that's nice.
It's a collaboration. It's easy enough for people to be like, oh, the artist didn't leave space, or oh, the letter did a bad job. But I think it's a little bit everything too. Like, if there's problems with the lettering, it's probably the writer. You know, most of the time it's the writer. So I think it's just kind of a team thing. You gotta kind of roll with it. The challenge of being a letterer is that a lot of the time you just have to make it work. Like, unless, like, I letter my own stuff because I change a ton. If I've written a script and I'm lettering it, I'll change a whole bunch. Like, half of the jokes in Dave are done in lettering. But for the most part, if you're hired to letter someone else's comic, unless you're comfortable going back to the writer and being like, yo, you're nuts, then you kind of just have to make it work sometimes. But you also have to preserve the artwork. That's also really key, because it's no one's reading the comic books, or no one should be reading the comic books really for the art, for the writer, because it's a visual medium, you know. So I think that it's paramount that the artwork be preserved, you know. And I always find it weird when artists don't get, like, if a publisher or an editor sends just the writer lettering proofs. That happens all the time, and I'm like, you gotta send this to the artist too. Like, that's their work. That's the whole thing. So I'm going on a rant about lettering and artists.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying.
This is going to be the only panel at the convention that handles lettering, so
yeah.
Let's run with it. What are the parts, I mean, you've been on the writer end, you've been on the lettering end, so what are the parts that a writer can do in the planning, in the script, that's going to help everyone downstream?
So what can a writer remember for the scripts?
Yeah, the example I often hear is, like, you know, the simple, make sure that the first person who talks is on the left side of the
room. Right, and I think that's a matter of keeping track of your room or of your environment or whatever. Like, if you're writing a scene and you've got these different interactions, you need to be cognizant of what that environment is, where the people are in relation, and how that scene's going to kind of move, because it should read left to right, top to bottom. You know, there's ways around it, but that's how it should be. But I think it's funny. A trick I use a lot is Twitter. If I'm writing a dialogue thing, and sometimes you see scripts or other comics, and there's a big, huge block of text, like a balloon, and you can't, it's too much. So I use Twitter. I'll open up Twitter, and it's like 140 characters.
Mm-hmm.
I never have a dialogue balloon that goes more than 140 characters. If I'm copy and pasting that dialogue into Twitter and it goes red, I know I have to trim it down. And I would keep it. I wouldn't do more than two or three of those tops in a panel, depending on how it is. I mean, that's just kind of simple stuff, I think. And that's a noob thing, is like way too much dialogue. You remember Terminals, like the first 8 pages of the first issue?
Yeah.
That was nuts. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was okay.
there's a lot of writing. Everyone thinks they're Bendis, but they end up writing comics like Kevin Smith.
Take away from me what you will from that statement. Right up here in front.
I have a question about tone. So, like, when you're setting a tone for a comic, how does that, like, work? Because, like, you write the script, and, like, does the artist decide what the tone is, or do you decide, like, how the, like, artist draws or creates artwork? Because you get a very dark comic book, right? And, like, then, generally speaking, the artist is going to have something that matches or contrasts that. But, like, do you decide on that beforehand or during?
I would say it's probably a lot of things. Probably the choice of artist would be...
because their style of art fits a certain tone. And then there's more than likely a synopsis of what this is about, how it's supposed to feel. Is it a noir book? Is it a superhero book? Is it funny? And everybody knows that right off the bat, and so everybody would tailor their work around that. Even the lettering might be hilarious in a certain book. Or,
yeah. And I think a lot of it comes down to, I mean, a lot of it is when you're thinking of tone, you got to think of your themes, what ultimately you're trying to say with this book, and what kind of experience are you going to give your readers with the book. That a tone plays a huge role in how that reading experience is, and I think it would be one thing for me as a writer to be like, I want this thing dark and gritty, and that's the tone, but ultimately that's the artist. I think that there has to be the most trust put in the artist. I mean, and that's why it's so important to when you're collaborating to kind of get that dialogue going, you know, and figuring out what kind of book the artist wants to do, you know, as opposed to will you do my book kind of thing. So it's just part of an ongoing discussion that creative teams should have if that's what they want to do. So, and it's very difficult. Tone's weird. It's sometimes hard to pin down, you know. Or sometimes, like, I'll write scripts during a collaboration, and then the artwork will come in and it'll be really different. Not in a bad way, in an awesome way. And that'll kind of inform tonally how it goes. But I think you can't have anything other than a cartoon strip, not to talk shit about cartoon strip, pardon my language. But like, you can't have anything with substance without theme. So ultimately stuff's gonna come out of everything. I'm sorry I swore, sir.
Yeah. Strange place to pick a line in the sand. The young lady right in the second row from the back.
The art community is really strong in Calgary. There's a drink and draw at the Unicorn, and there's a few around town, so the artists get together and have a beer and draw and support each other. And then there's also little units of maybe three or four artists that go to Denny's and draw together there. And I think that largely is held together by the conventions. We all meet here and we talk, and then there's after parties and things like that. So I think it's tricky because maybe I'm generalizing, but comic book artists and writers are not typically super social people. But I guess we have that common bond, so we should hang out, right? So I would say the drinking draws for artists. I don't know about writers. I know.
It's the whole. Calgary has a huge comic book creator. I don't want to say scene because it's not like, you know, it's like kind of our monthly comic book. But like, but there's a concentration of people making comics in Calgary. Really huge. And actually, there's a show called Panel One Creator Festival on June 4th at the Hillhurst Community Center. And that's like a mini one-day con, and it's kind of all people locally make comic books, create their own stuff. But that's kind of a cool, like, you can see it. I was like, oh, there's actually all these people that live in Calgary, and I see a lot of them once a year at this show. In terms of collaboration, I think the thing with comics, and it's such an industry and a lifestyle that you spend the vast majority of your time alone in your house, crying in the shower. I do. But like, so, and it's such a remote industry. There's so many, like, I've been working with Valentin on Dave,
And he lives in Brazil, and we've known each other for 4 years. And so, and there's so many collaborators that I know through email, and all my employers are email, editors email. So it's really, you can do it anywhere. So that makes it a very insular experience, is the right word.
That's pretty cool.
But like, yeah, so I mean, it's really great that you kind of, that there is this presence. And I think this is the first year with the whole of that panel one thing that we're kind of trying to make it cohesive, actually like a community presence.
Panel one has developed really quickly in the past. They've only been around for about a year and a half, but it's grown really fast. I'm also here in the city, and every year WeTalk does a creator summit where we get as many creators together as we can and just talk about comic stuff. The first year we did it was four creators at Alpha Comics. Ryan was one of them. And then the second year was 8, then it was 12. This year it was 22, the fourth year we did it. All creating, some of them working at Marvel, some of them at Image, DC, web comics, every level. But they have been there though already. So it was when they started noticing each other. And started sitting in a room. But there's a lot of cross-pollination that way, that like someone will draw this book and then letter this book.
Right.
Another one's kind of given a once-over on editing, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think we had another hand up.
Oh, I was just wondering, do you back. Find your tattooing, do you just have color books now?
Yeah, it changed a lot, actually. I mean, you're always evolving as an artist and bringing in new mediums. You maybe try charcoal for a while, and it changes the way you look at everything. And tattooing is it's very there's a knack to it. Like you lose color saturation and vibrancy by about 20% a month after it's tattooed. So you have to really, really concentrate on contrast and color relationships. And so I think having that way of thinking and looking at art has really affected the way I do it on paper now.
All right. Let's go here.
Yeah. What advice would you give to a first-time artist, writer collaboration in terms of like producing pages or comics? Like, how much leeway would you want to give the artists if they're just drawing, your first script or like your first idea? And how long do you think it takes to get that getting that collaborative process together to actually make a cohesive 5 or 10 page story?
I think that when it comes to making comics, there's so many things that I can tell you, but like, I think it's important to really examine what you're saying and to finish it first and foremost. Don't stop, you know. And I mean, 10 pages, depends. It's hard to quantify. Some days I can write 15 pages. Some days I can barely get 2 done. So, I mean, you just gotta work at it and get it finished. And I also think it's important to revise as well. You know, don't ever do something with your first draft, because first drafts always suck. They're always the worst. So, yeah.
All right, we're going to do one more question, and had you figured out how you're going to give away books?
Were you just going to
pick favorites, or?
Oh, man.
Like, just whiff them into the crowd and jump for it?
Fight to the death.
This side against
this
side.
Whoever brings me the head.
You had a question?
I've been full-time freelance for almost a year and a half, and so I started writing comic book 2008-09-ish, and so I quit my day job in 2014, is that right? Yeah.
15?
Yeah. Something like that. So yeah, I do now. I don't have a lot of money, but I do. So, yeah, how are we going to do giveaways?
How do you want
to first it? Person to tell me the what when does the fourth issue of Bloodlines occur?
When does it take place?
I said it 10 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all didn't listen.
Was the Salem Witch
Trial? Hey.
There you go.
Come on up, man. Take your pick. You're going to go for the trades first, I know it.
I'll take that, I guess.
Yeah.
I
don't know. All
right. That's like a magic trick force right there. You just slid the one.
Hey, put your card in the car. All right. Okay. Someone, the first person to name two of the super people from Terminals, or their powers.
Can you mention the girl with the bees that come out of the forest?
Yeah.
The werewolf ghost.
How can you not do the bear?
All right, come and get it. Come and get it. I'll give you a Dave.
I was just enraptured by the bee girl.
Yeah. She'll sting you.
2 minutes. Gotta do it quick.
2 minutes?
It's the rapid fire.
All right.
How many years ago was the first volume of Terminals?
Who said that?
I said it first.
Fight. All right. I'm gonna give you a hot damn.
Thank you.
I haven't read it yet.
Haven't what?
I haven't read Terminals yet.
Oh, it's for sale at X16. what? Alright, first for three people up here. Whatever. First three people. First three
jump
people.
Ball.
Get it now.
1, 2, 3.
Alright, so I'm going to give you curb stop.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you can of one.
Thank you.
Alright.
Awesome. Next man.
And I've got
Trevor and Ryan are tabling together this weekend. Where can they find you again?
Next to Charles Sewell's massive lineup.
Yeah, so just when you see Charles Sewell's massive lineup, just go, excuse me. Please, everyone with your Poe Dameron comics, please make way.
Did you say Podunk?
I said Poe Dameron.
Oh, Poe Dameron. Take your damn Podunk comics.
I haven't given
you
got
some prints. Yeah. I have a package of my prints. They're signed. And I want to give them to you, actually, because I don't think we really gave you a good answer to your question.
Fantastic. And Ryan will also be appearing on our Whose Script Is It Anyone panel tomorrow, Saturday at 6:30. We will be reading unproduced comic book scripts. These are real scripts for movies that were not made. It is a ton of fun. We had a huge crowd last year, and Ryan's practicing his impressions already.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Make sure to make it out for that.
Nope. Walking? I can't be walking.
All right, thanks everyone, and enjoy the rest of the expo.
Thanks, y'all. Appreciate it.